only have this one opportunity, and you don't know when that opportunity is going to end. So every moment that we can be mindful does matter.
Welcome to Resonate, conversations and life lessons from Rancho La Puerta. I'm your host, Barry. The ranch changes and evolves as our guests' needs change and evolve. We have an ongoing conversation and relationship with our guests, and our program reflects what our guests wish to experience during their week at the ranch. An example of this is after 9/11, we saw an increase in the desire for spiritual programming. Yes, we offer much in the fields of mind and body, but our offerings in spirituality have gone up a lot. We offer morning and afternoon meditation sessions, sound healing, labyrinth walks, meditation hikes, a silent dinner, and a daily inner fitness program. My guest today, Jacques-Pierre Cole, is a Zen Buddhist monk who brings his gifts of mindfulness and meditation to our guests several times a year. I know you will enjoy learning about his journey and his message.
Hey, Jacques. Hey. How are you doing today? Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. I know you happen to be teaching mindfulness and meditation at the ranch this week, so it was easy for me to track you down and catch you. So
yes, one of the easier ways to catch me.
It is an easier way. So you were ordained a monk in 2012, and you are a Zen Buddhist monk. Is that correct?
Right. So Zen, what the lineage of Bon, which is B-O-N, which is kind of in that controversial space because Tibetan Buddhism doesn't always recognize it, but they're both kind of simultaneously at the same time.
So being the lineage that you are, I think there's not that many of you, right?
There's not that many practicing Bon Buddhists.
So I did read one time that you said the Tibetan Buddhist monks have a lot of rules. I think you said like maybe 264 rules, and that's a lot of rules. What's a couple of the rules that your lineage would adhere to? If there's not 264, are there what?
Yeah, 100? No. So, you know, with the combination of Zen, it kind of lightens the load of all those different rules. One of the old traditional rules, interesting enough, was no dancing. Monks are supposed to dance. Fortunately for me, I have the Zen portion of it, so I don't abide by follow those rules. And those rules were meant for people who were really living in a temple and staying in that that type of life. I've been a big believer that your temple is wherever you go. And that's what I've been practicing for years and years. And is what I've been preaching to other people, just really how to develop your own temple wherever you are on this planet and establishing what that means. But yeah, that's one of the rules. You know, another one of the other rules is about, it's interesting enough, about not sleeping on high beds, meaning know that you're meant to sleep on the floor because they don't want you to get attached to having that type of what they consider a luxury item. One of the other rules that of the many that there are, but those are the comparable ones with Bon and Tibetan tradition.
I'm guessing celibacy is different between the two.
You know what's interesting? This is that little thing that people don't know, that Tibetan monks, you know, and Bon monks and all monks, you can, you know, have partners, you can be in relationships like that. In fact, the Siddhartha, you know, the right, which most people are familiar with, it was, if you find someone who's aligned with your principles, then you should be with that person. Now, with the Tibetan monks, different monks living in a temple, they don't express that, or they try to live in that type of celibacy lifestyle. But that is one of the things that they, if they so choose to do that, and they found someone who aligns with them, they could. There's no ramifications if they decide to do that. It's just, you don't find many that do. And now it's gotten to where most people believe, much like a Catholic priest or something, that they cannot. But there's actually cannot. It's just most do not.
Wow, because it may be distracting for them. So let's talk a little bit about your journey to where you are today. So you had a pretty tough childhood from what I read and heard you talk about.
I did.
Can you expand on that a little bit for us?
In my beginnings, you know, my father, where I feel like many of my just struggles came from, not only the neighborhood I grew up with, my father was very abusive. And when I say very abusive, there are the, when people think about that, these are the, he used a belt, fist, whatever he could find. And typically it was a 15 to 20 lashes that I would be hit with. And, you know, at a young age, unfortunately, I was still dedicated to him because I thought there was really something wrong with me, and that if I could only just get him to love me, then that would stop. And so that became just a driving force to continue to try to please him, and really just stirring up conflict with myself internally, externally. And, you know, my first suicide attempt was when I was 8 years old. That's because I was just emotionally distraught. My father died when I was 14 years old in a car accident. So suddenly I was just left and lost because, one, I didn't have this person that I was trying to prove myself to and actually feel some love from, but also I was lost in just myself. A lot of conflict on who am I? What am I about? What are these emotions that I'm feeling? I can't really balance these emotions from my depression. I was diagnosed with bipolar depression at a young age, and I was really just a mess of a individual. On one end, I really loved helping people, and I did. On the other end, I was very self-destructive. I really wanted to not exist. That would be the battle mentally for several years.
Was your mom part of the picture?
Yeah, you know, my dad was very manipulative, and they got a divorce when I was around 9, 10. And my father really taught me how to not like her. And, you know, my mother and I didn't really have a relationship. So when he died, I was living with my mom, and she pretty much treated me as an adult because she really, there was no relationship there. So she basically allowed me to, she showed me how to cook like 3 or 4 meals. And then from then on, I pretty much ate by myself or ate at other people's houses, but I no longer sat with the family. I did not share holidays with them. But when I say them, my mother and my sister didn't share holidays with them. I was usually on my own or I was off somewhere else. And that would be our relationship. Very just necessary to get things done at the home, but not any, you know, hugs or I love this about you, I love this, until I would leave for the military when I was 17.
Where did you grow up when you were a child?
Kansas City, Missouri. I also lived on the Kansas side as well. So grew up in Kansas City, Missouri, but also lived on the Kansas side. If people are familiar the demographics and the dynamics there.
Right. So your mom and dad separated when you were 9.
Mm-hmm.
You still had a relationship with your dad until he was killed in the car crash. And he continued to be abusive.
Yeah. He continued to be abusive. And, you know, in fact, there's a short, quick story is I hurt my ankle when I was on a go-kart, oddly enough. And it turned so much that it was swollen, so you couldn't straighten it out. And I probably should have went to the hospital, but my father refused to take me. And he gave me a stick to walk around with. And I just remember that I couldn't walk on it, but he was trying to force me to walk on it because he said I needed to get through and over that pain to be well. And so he would take me to the mall, and he told me I couldn't take the stick in there, and he would have me walk on this ankle that was probably should have been at the hospital, at least x-rayed. And those were like the things that he would do that were in his eyes trying to toughen me up.
Right.
And unfortunately, it was just doing a mental job on me.
And you said you attempted suicide at age 8, but you had more than one attempt, right?
Absolutely. So age 8 was just the beginning of it. You know, I would continue through life and have, there's at 8, at 14, 15, 16, 17, and then up into my 20s, I had suicide attempts, each one a little bit more life-threatening than the one before. So, and that's because I would be fine at some points, but then there's always that underlying theme that I did not want to be here, that I hate you, I don't like you, I'm not worthy, was that underlining theme that was always with me through that time.
I was lucky enough to take one of your meditations this week, and you told us a story about how after your father died in the car crash, how you realized that you had taken on the role of being an abuser to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
How did that realization happen, and what does that mean exactly?
Yeah, so, you know, my father was very physically abusive, And, you know, after he died, I was really trying to come to terms with forgiving him. And I was so focused on forgiving him for what he did to me, but I didn't realize that all the language I was saying to myself, I had carried the torch as this abuser onto myself now. And that was that I not only did I need to forgive him, I needed to also forgive myself. And I was so focused on him, but not so focused on myself and wondering why I was still mentally struggling is because that I needed to forgive him and me for taking on that role of now being this mental abuser to myself.
Mm-hmm. What was the turning point for you that helped you make that jump, that, you know, realization? Because I imagine it made huge changes in your life when you were able to do that.
Yeah. In fact, it was my last suicide attempt. You know, it's a pretty traumatic one. And I realized that how I was doing life, how I was humaning, as I don't even know if that's, but I'll use it, how I was doing life was not working whatsoever. And I was tired of being exhausted. I was tired of being so depressed. And so I thought, I need to let go of everything I think I know, humble myself, and just be like an infant to how do you be happy? How do you experience joy? And I decided that I'm going to practice that for a little bit. And if it works, great, I'll survive. If it doesn't work, I know I have this card over here, but hopefully as I move forward, that card would slowly disappear, which it has.
So how did you start to practice happiness and joy?
No, I mean, it was like a little kid. So first I just started talking to people, right? Anyone I saw who was happy or laughing or smiling, I started to watch other people. And there's a beauty that I think is lost on some of us is the power of, and the art, which I think meditation helps with that, is listening. There's so much we can pick up when we actually listen to understand, or we just take the time to listen to other people and really observe and absorb what they're saying. And it's really a practice art. So I began listening to just everyone and just reading everything possible, but more just watching people laugh, watching people in relationships, because I did not feel like I knew how to interact in that form. And that was the beginning. That was what I started with first, with just a lot of research of people and watching and fascination and asking people what is it like when you're so happy? What is it like when you're laughing? And it'd be amazing the answers I would get, but I was really a student learning from friends, family, strangers, anyone who would be willing to talk to me, because sometimes that's a weird question for people.
Along your journey, I mean, before you decided to become a monk, because that's maybe 12 years ago, so that you were ordained, you had many different jobs along the way. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, for me, I've looked at, you know, when I was starting to feel trying to find what I was about and who I am, I think I was treating life like a buffet, right? There's all these things that when I was coming a little bit out of my depression, having that a little bit stabilized, all these things I wanted to do. So it's like, I want to taste, try, do this. So I went through a plethora of jobs, just trying to, one, learn about people, two, learn about myself, and three, see what I was capable of. So from being in the military to running a daycare with 150 kids to police officer to I was in an acting troupe where I actually had hair, went down to my shoulder. I was performing an acting troupe to I built a lot of nonprofits, and that was a passion of mine. And then just those odd jobs you never think of. Like at one point I was a matchmaker, much like the movie Hitch. I was helping match people up for love. And that was one of the random jobs that I found that I did for a little bit. But once again, it was listening to people, understanding people, and that's what fascinated me.
Hi, I'm Fabiola Cobian. I'm a senior esthetician and also the spa manager at the Three Spas here at Rancho La Puerta. And I'm very happy to share with you why I'm here. I've been in contact with Rancho for over 6 years now, And the reason why I come back and stay and work around these beautiful, beautiful places, because we do have a real connection with what the land offers to us. And that is also reflected in what we do every single day in our treatment rooms, because we do have the amazing opportunity of what we receive from the land, use that in our services. For example, essential oils from calendula that we use in our 99% organic calendula cream, which is a universal moisturizer. We also use essential oils, for example, sage, rosemary, eucalyptus that you see everywhere around the campus. And it's a pleasure for us to provide that into this holistic approach that we present to you in every single service, in every interaction that we have with our guests, to really create that amazing opportunity for the skin, which is the major organ of our body, to be dictating our health and showing what's happening from within into this journey of feeling better and being the very version of ourselves.
I hope you're enjoying today's podcast as much as I am. To learn more about our wonderful presenters and exciting weeks coming up at the ranch, go to rancholaporta.com and check out our events calendar. Make sure to mention the podcast when making your reservation to take advantage of a special offer. Some restrictions may apply. When did you start studying Buddhism, and how did this transition into becoming a Zen Buddhist monk?
Yeah, so one of my favorite stories with this is that I had started studying different philosophies and religions, a lot of the main ones. So the Catholicism, I went to a mosque, read the Quran, read the Bible, read different versions of the Bible, of course, you know, read the Book of Mormon, all these different styles. I was really trying to learn. And then I finally came across Buddhism. And in fact, I believe the book that I picked up for the first time was, you know, Zen Buddhism for Beginners. Very popular book out there. And I started reading it, and everything I was reading, I really resonated with. And then at the time, this was in LA, I was traveling, and there was a monk there who's in just his regular clothes. He was going from one temple in LA to another temple. I think I want to say it was up north in California. And he said, "Hey, it looks like you're wanting to learn about Buddhism." I said, "Oh yeah, I thought this is really resonating with me." So after a little bit of conversation, I asked if he'd mentor me. And of course he said no. And so I asked again and again, and even on the airplane, I asked again. I slid him a note that I had the flight attendant give to him, like, "Hey, you know, you mentor me." And he said no at least 15 times. But it was that 16th time, I guess, that he decided that he would. And through that mentorship is what began that journey. Now, many times, and I'll throw this in there real quick, many times people who decide to be a monk, they can go to, you have many options. If you go to Thailand, or if you go to somewhere like that, you can pay to be a monk for a day or a monk for a month. You can do that way. Or you can go to many of the temples. They have traditional one-year programs that you go through, and slowly you become a Zen monk or whatever you're trying to attain. I did not set out to be a monk. I was just trying to find a good way I could emotionally regulate. It was just through the teaching that I worked with my teacher, and I worked with him through almost 6 years, that he then said, "I think you'd be great in a teaching capacity. I think you're in this position. You'd be wonderful to be ordained." And the first time I said no. And the second time, because, you know, I had to do like he did me. The second time.
fair enough.
The second time he asked, and I said yes. And we had this ceremony in Utah on Timpanogos Mountain, the 2-day hike, and did a ceremony. And that's where I became ordained. And from there, I started teaching at temples and thought to live in a temple for a little bit and live that type of life. But I just found that with my background, I was better served with helping people emotionally connect with using meditation as a vehicle. Being in a temple was not the right space for me.
Was your mentor also a Zen Buddhist monk of that tradition?
No, Tibetan. There's a okay. Tibetan Buddhist monk. I mean, by his choice, bound by the rules of staying at Tibetan monastery. And that's how pretty much he lived his life. I would meet with him when he would travel. And then we'd have correspondence through telephone, things like that, letters at that time. And so that's why I went for so many years of him just really mentorship of a lot of just deep dives into myself. Didn't begin with a lot of history or which I thought it was going to be. In fact, or we started with, he just kept asking me about how do I sleep? And I remember thinking like, what is this? It's more like the Karate Kid, wax on, wax off type of style. But we spent 2 months talking about sleep. That's how it began. But I realized the importance of sleep helps us. If we get quality sleep, helps us with communication, helps us with thinking better, helps us with listening better. So that's why having a good quality sleep is important. And that's why he focused on that in the beginning.
I think I heard you say one time, or maybe I read it somewhere, that you one of the reasons too that you wanted to be a Zen Buddhist monk is because you always wanted to have children, be married and have children, right? So has that happened for you?
No children. I think I have moved on from that space. I don't think that's something that is that's in the cards for me. I think when I was younger, a few years ago, if you would ask me that question, when I think we talked before, sure, but no, that's not in the space for me now. Do I love kids? Absolutely. And if someone has some kids, I'd love to take care of them. But in my space and what I'm doing, that's not going to be in the future for me. And I'm fine with that. I would just provide opportunities for children that I can.
I mean, we don't have to talk about this if you don't want to, but I do know that you lost a child at one point in your life.
Mm-hmm.
At what point was that?
So she is 4 months along. And we were married for just a short time. And so it was an accident. It was a tragic accident. Not even tragic. It was one of those things you can't control. It's dealing with weather. So weather pretty much took both their lives. And so that's when it was one of those things that the main thing I would like to share about this is that's where the theme of celebrate today's day came from, because that was 8 hours that drastically changed my life and the trajectory of what I thought the future road was going to build. And we don't know. We don't know when something like that's going to happen. We don't know when our lives are going to cease to exist. So it became a theme of really, you know, how long do we hold on to things, right? How much should we appreciate the moments that we're in? How much should we appreciate our friends, our family? How important it is to understand where we're spending our time and how valuable that time is with the people we're with, because we don't know. And it doesn't mean that you should just go all out and try to, you know, see everyone every single day or something like that. But it just means that if you have frustrations or anger or some ill will towards a person or even towards yourself, how long do you hold on to that? That's really where that came out of. It's just, you know, if I'm mad or frustrated, like how long do I want to be frustrated and hold on to what this person or that person? I really don't, because we just don't know.
So does a Buddhist philosophy have specific teachings about dealing with suffering and loss?
Yeah. So, you know, when the whole thought of the Buddhist philosophy is that we all suffer. And this is probably something that many people watching this knows, that that's the basis, that we all suffer. And there is a way to end that suffering. In that suffering, the way to end that suffering is what they call the Eightfold Path. And it's one of those things, said simply, but very difficult to do. And the Eightfold Path involves right understanding, right thoughts, you know, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. What does that mean exactly? Let's take right speech, for example. It means that we should really use meditation, right, to slow things down and really think about before we say things, how we say things. Words have power. And so that is a practice in right speech. When it comes to right livelihood, we need to understand ourselves enough to align ourselves into jobs that meet our values, right? So it's following that path that's really kind of the roadmap for someone to not only live their lives, but also live their lives hopefully in harmony with themselves and, in the Buddhist term, in their suffering, right? But once again, you don't try to tackle those all at once. You don't try to do them all at the same time. You focus on a little bit here, but that is, when you think of all of Buddhism, all the texts, all the things you can read, it simply comes down to the Eightfold Path and what I just said. That is the meat of all of it.
You teach meditation, and you, the difference for you between mindfulness and meditation, and what is the benefits of those for a human being?
Yeah, so when we look at, you know, the meditation as a practice, the meditation is simply we are putting ourselves on pause, not necessarily not thinking. We're just having a moment where we're practicing almost like a personal mastery, right? And to really master ourselves, we need to have this designated time that we just put things on pause and we're able to disconnect from all things around us. That's the meditation piece. The mindfulness piece is, as I move through my day, how present am I, right? When two people are talking to each other, how much am I sitting there waiting to talk? Or how much am I just simply listening to this person and tracking everything they say? That is the mindfulness piece. Because if we're not mindful, then we're just kind of sleepwalking through this life. And if we think that no matter what your spiritual beliefs are, if you think that you only have this one opportunity and you don't know when that opportunity is going to end, well, I should be pretty mindful about everything that's going on and everything that's happening, because that way I'm getting the most out of this one chance I have, as opposed to if I think I have many lives, then sure, I can be mindless for a few years and it won't matter. Right. But we don't know that. So every moment that we can to be mindful does matter.
Beautifully said. I watched one of your TED Talks and you described meditation as one breath in, one breath out, and keep repeating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that mudra meditation?
Yeah, so there's mudras, and the reason why I'd say one breath, because you know, often in my line of work, I come across people tell me I can't meditate, it's too hard, I tried, and it's like you bring the focus to just one breath. Let's just start there. And if you feel like you didn't do it right, guess what? Just take another breath. If you feel like you didn't do that right, guess what? Start tomorrow with another breath, but let's just do one. One big inhale, one big exhale, start there and then see where it gets you. And that's where the one breath came in, because one breath is really where it starts and really where just that one can sometimes, not all the time, can start to change things, not only just with the how we think, in that moment can start to change our feeling. It may lead to beautiful things. It may lead to frustrations. But the great thing is, you wake up tomorrow, you get to start with one breath again.
Yeah. Now, I met you first, I think, when you came to Ranch in 2018. So 6 years ago, probably, I first met you.
Yeah.
I can't help noticing that there's some physical changes going on in you. Tell us about that. What was the catalyst for that? And
you know, I was living the big Buddha for a little bit. And I decided that, you know, I wanted to go to the other end of the spectrum. I was having health concerns. I had done training in the past, but, you know, I decided that it was time to really focus on that. Now, here's the funny thing about it. One of the things I did, I started running. And I don't like running whatsoever. Don't like it. I tried all the different techniques, music, all this stuff. Didn't like it. The one thing I do, when people ask me, why do you do it if you don't like it? It trains the muscle in my mind to do something that I'm uncomfortable with and overcome when my mind is, everything in my mind is telling me to stop. And I feel like it trains that part of my brain to, even I hear that, to move past it. So it's become almost this mindful meditation practice of doing something that I don't like, but's good for me, and overriding what my brain is saying. And, you know, I think that's really one of the keys to helping us change, right? Is we'll have our mind will go to the path of least resistance. It's up to us to really override that, to understand the benefits of what we are trying to do and tell ourselves, hey, this is the reward. The more I train, the more I run, you know, the weight that I lose, that's benefiting my longevity and my livelihood. And so to have that focus. So yeah, so I have a half marathon coming up in a month, and I have three left. I decided to do 10 races of all kinds, and I have three half marathons left, and then I'll just be running like 3 miles, three times a week is kind of the goal.
That's great. That's awesome. Because yeah, you look great. You look super healthy. And
60 pounds.
Yeah, that's amazing. Congratulations. That's wonderful.
Feels good.
So are you still on Sunday mornings during the Art of Living?
Yeah. So it's more, a little bit more sporadic now for those of you who are on Facebook. It's just a free meditation that I do on Made for Joy Facebook page. It's usually the first and third Sunday of the month that I do a meditation piece that's roughly about 30 minutes. So it's short. It's recorded. So if you don't even make it on Sunday mornings, you can see it. But that's one of the things that I've been still doing for quite a long time now. And then other things I'm trying to hopefully create as well.
That's wonderful. And we're certainly grateful that you're here with us today. And at the ranch this week too. And so on the website, if people want to check out when you're going to be here again.
Yes.
I read a quote by you that I think is the perfect quote to end our little conversation with, because I love it. It's, there's nothing better than human kindness. Be that person.
Mm.
I love that.
Thank you.
Do you remember saying that?
Yeah, I remember saying that. And I believe that, you know, that there is nothing better than, you know, genuine human kindness. And we all know when we feel it, because it makes our day, our month sometimes, and we remember that feeling, that sensation, sometimes for years to come. So imagine having a full collection of those.
Yeah, I agree. I think kindness is the most important thing on the planet. So thanks for spending the time with us. Thanks for being so vulnerable. And I look forward to seeing you again.
All right. Hey, I appreciate it. Thank you. And thanks to the ranch for having me. I always appreciate that.
Always. All right. We'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
My visit with Jacques today reminded me that attitude is everything. Jacques had a very rough childhood with lots of physical abuse. He had multiple suicide attempts. Then he lost his wife and unborn child in a tragic accident. He tried many different jobs and he studied many different religions and philosophies. His search for happiness and understanding led him to studying Buddhism. There he found joy and inner peace. As an ordained Zen Buddhist monk, Jacques is in a healthy personal relationship. He's in a healthy relationship with his body, and he's sharing his gifts through meditation and mindfulness. As humans, we have a choice how we look and how we respond to things that happen to us. Life comes with a lot of suffering and unfairness, but it also comes with a lot of joy and a lot of new chances. I was inspired by Jacques today and the strength of the human spirit. I hope you were too. Until next time, this is Barry wishing you health and daily joy.